Hello, my name is Vanessa Vallely and I'm CEO of We Are Tech Women. I'm delighted to introduce She Talks Tech, which is a podcast which brings to life the personal experiences of women and men working in tech with a focus on diversity, equity and inclusion. We also include the odd technical topic to keep you abreast of innovating areas of tech that may be of interest to you. So this is a brand new season, season six, and we're delighted to focus on a number of incredible women looking at their career and sharing their top tips for success. In this episode of She Talks Tech, we hear from Connie Moser, CEO of Nevenio. She is a healthcare IT leader with over 30 years of experience building growing organizations. So tell me a little bit more about Nevenio.
Nevenio provides indoor location infrastructure free. So all you need is Wi-Fi and a cell phone, which based on the industry is completely transformative. It's non-invasive, it's less costly, and it provides immediate access to locations of people and things, equipment like an infusion pump in healthcare, and also allows you to task.
So this sounds like a new technology, is it?
It's been developed over 15 years. Nikki Tregoni, our CTO and founder, is also an Oxford professor that runs this area of science and technology research at Oxford University. And she and her staff have been working on this at Oxford and then created Nevenio in 2015 to continue that research on and commercialize this transformative technology, because there's so much value to it.
Okay, so this technology sounds very similar to the type of technology that we use for COVID in terms of locating people's proximity. Is it a similar technology to that?
It is. The difference is, and why this is so transformative, is those technologies had to place beacons, hardware, all over the healthcare system. And they had to identify the space with these beacons and then use other technologies to track people. So it was COVID tracing is what we called it in the US. This is beaconless, except for the asset tags, if you want to track assets, right? It's beaconless. So you don't have to put those all around the health system. You just need to walk around. It's like a crowdsource app. You download the app on your phone, you put it in your pocket, you walk around, and it creates a crowdsource map that's 3D and multi-floor. Never has there been a technology like this in healthcare, which then allows you to find and locate people and things, and also be able to request assistance in whatever way that may be.
Okay, so if I understand this right, people use their phones and you can tag other people's phones. But if it's equipment and things, how do you get around that? Do you have like a special tagging system or technology that you use?
It's really inexpensive Bluetooth tags today. Basically, put a little Bluetooth tag on the back of an infusion pump as an example. And when people are just walking around the healthcare system, they don't have to do anything. These cell phones are pinging and communicating with those asset tags and identifying through multiple cell phones the trajectory of that asset tag and therefore that asset. And we can identify where the asset is within 2 meters of accuracy.
So that sounds amazing. So you're basically using it to cut down on wasted time, and you're giving people tasks to do that if they're near the task that needs to be done. So it's a kind of a way of streamlining operations. Is that the gist of it?
Absolutely. If you think about the labor shortage of our nurses, just let's take nurses alone. Studies have shown in multiple studies that they can spend up to 25% of their 8-hour shift. That's 2 hours just looking for things. So it's taking them away from the bedside and orchestrating that care. So if they can identify the asset, I need an infusion pump, and they know, because infusion pumps are like this big, right? They're easily hideable, even though they don't mean to hide them, they can hide easily and they can't find them. So they overspend on capital expenditures, and nurses become exhausted just looking for these equipment when they should be focused on that patient. So this saves that 25% of just looking for equipment to care for a patient. So in other industries, it's all about the location of people and things and the tasking of people and things. Our system is not created exclusively for healthcare. It can be configured very easily. So we're looking at hospitality. We're looking at warehousing and logistics. And those are our industries and markets we are currently exploring.
Okay, so I have a question. Who sets up the tasks? Is there like a master task handler, or is it kind of more of an organic thing where someone over here might need something doing and they just add it to their list and then it allocates it from there?
That's exactly what it is. It does not have to have a help desk handling the requests. We've created an AI tasking engine. And as requests come in, either through an integration from a command center or just through our system directly, the tasking engine identifies who's the closest, who's able to do the task from both a certification and maybe there's language needed, or we need two people because of weight requirements on a patient. Whatever it is, the tasking engine then looks at all of those factors and then does a workload balancing. So let's say a transporter had 15 tasks and another one had 10, and they're both in the same proximity to that patient. It would identify and send the request to the one that has only had 10 tasks in a given day, just for that fair and even workload balancing.
That's such a great way of allocating resources and getting things done and using kind of, you know, tech to as enabler to do that. So just moving on to your career, I wanted to ask you, because obviously you've worked in data for a long time and you've worked in healthcare, and you seem to have stayed in those kind of roles. So did you actually plan your career path, or were you inspired by something in particular?
I might get emotional on this one. It was serendipity. Okay. And it was my stepfather, who I love and adore, who is since passed. But he came home and he worked for United Way. And he said, there's this really interesting company in healthcare. And that's how it all got started. I interviewed and went to it. And what I found in healthcare is the yearning and the desire and the dedication for care, right? And as a servant leader, that mix is a really cool thing. I'm not saying healthcare is easy. Healthcare is a hard nut to crack, right? But the combination of technology and the people and data has kept me here for 33 years now.
Oh, wow. 33 years. That's amazing. So what do you wish you'd have known perhaps when you started off on that career journey?
You know, probably if somebody had told me, and I would tell young people who are looking at healthcare, whether you're a nurse and you no longer want to be a nurse, right? You want to stay in healthcare, or you're a business person that has the desire to work in an industry that is so dedicated to the mission of healthcare and patient outcomes, is that you don't have to be a technologist. What you have to be is a good listener and a good critical thinker, because technology is wonderful, but without the connection of need to transformative technology has little to no value. And you need both of those skill sets to come together and really figure out how do we really become less invasive to all of those 3.5 million active nurses in the US alone, right? That need your help simplifying the orchestration of care. So my advice, or what I wish I had known, was just that. And I really enjoy that piece of it, but didn't realize that when I came into technology healthcare.
That sounds like a brilliant sort of problem solving, isn't it? Simplifying and making complex tasks manageable is kind of eating the elephant, isn't it, really? So you developed your career through management into C-suite. What do you think makes you a good leader? Is there anything that kind of sticks out that's made you the leader that you are today?
I would say experience, right? The bumps in the road, and being able to recognize the bumps in the road is one, right? And learn from them, right? When you're first a manager, you have no idea what you're doing. You are managing like you were an expert in a line job, right? And you have to. So the bumps in the road and learning from them, learning that diversity is so much more than just the color of a person's skin and the sexual preference or the religious preference. It's about the perceptions that people bring to the table, right? And really fine tuning that, because we all make mistakes every day in every way, right? With that. But continually fine tuning that is something I work on. It's like writing and speaking. You have to review and say, I did a good job today, or I need to change, right? So those are probably, and then critical thinking. You know, liberal arts education provided me with the ability to sit down with professors and critically think. And I've used that and fine-tuned it throughout my career. But again, those three things, admitting mistakes and learning from them, diversity of perception and thought, and not just seeing a person's physical characteristics or the other things that surround it, and then critical thinking, are really important skill sets for what I would call a servant leader. And empowering them.
Now, we all know leadership can be quite a challenge. So talk to me about some of your greatest challenges.
That's a hard thing to really understand. We had this wonderful, when I was at McKesson, wonderful diversity DE&I training program that for the first time truly opened my eyes to the perceptions that people bring to their the table based on their historical experience, right? And I was struck by that. It was a most excellent program, and I continually attempt to learn from that. But it's the hardest thing, because you get busy, you have goals, you have, you know, meetings you have to attend, and you can easily forget that and fail on any day basis, and then you have to pull yourself back in. So it's probably the most challenging, but it's also the most rewarding when you get it right.
So Nvenio is actually a British company. So you're a CEO in Tennessee of a British company. So how does that work?
So when Nvenio and I found each other, our goal is to launch in the US. And they just felt a CEO with knowledge of the US healthcare system, with patient flow and capacity experience, because that's where I've spent a large part of my career, in both analytics and in workflow technologies, would be best for the growth, the exponential growth of the company, right? So that's how I arrived, with the experience and a US base.
So we all know that women are very much a minority in tech, and more so in leadership roles. How do we address that gender balance? And is this something that perhaps mentorship can solve?
You know, mentoring is something I've committed my life to, both in education. So I'm on my board of trustees of my undergraduate institution, because I think education is so important. In a role as a woman or a female executive leader, it's critically important. So I always have at least one mentor programs going on, if not multiple. But what's important for young women to know is, again, back to that comment that I made earlier in our conversation about, even if you are not a technologist, there are skill sets that make you perfect for this type of environment. And that's being able to be what I'll call a translator and a critical thinker. And there are so many young female up and coming executives that have those skill sets that can fine tune them through mentorship. And I think females are very sensitive to hearing the need. So I think they're well suited for this type of technology environment and will do very, very well. And when you become an executive leader, it's all about being a servant leader and hearing and understanding perspectives, which I think when you fine tune those skill sets, female executives are very good at that.
So you've had an incredible career. How would you encourage other women who want to perhaps join digital in healthcare?
I actually started in installing systems, went into education, went into product management, then went into sales, then went into running a division, then into running companies. So look for the roles. Based on your experience, you might want to start in implementation, which teaches you, I call it the MBA of healthcare, really getting in and understanding the needs from the front line. Also, if you have skills in product management and you really understand the listening and the translating and working directly with those customers and not being so scientific, because it's not science that drives it, it's the translation that drives it. And then being able to translate that to technologists. So it's all about communication skills. Those are two really good areas to start in healthcare. If you feel that you have that type of interest, sales is also a very good area to start because you have to understand in this environment, which is a tough sales environment, the customer and listening to that customer need and creating that bridge, which we're good at because we listen, right? We hear them. And that's a good training ground for executive growth, right? And executive opportunities. And I would say, don't feel like you're stuck in a job. My salaries have gone up and down over the year, or my base comp and variable comp, but I walked in a variety of shoes from a technologist, and it helped me fine tune that perspective, you know, understanding what installers are thinking about, understanding what customers and product managers are thinking about, understanding sales and the pressure of sales. So there's a lot of areas you can enter healthcare technology, but there's also a lot of growth. And I would say just keep moving based on your interests, keep extending yourself, and you'll find a great career. I grabbed a hold of opportunities that help expand my horizon or my thought process.
So it appears you've had a kind of squiggly career that's gone up and down and chopped and changed quite a bit. Do you think that's helped you build a more diverse team around you? Because you've worked with a number of people and obviously you have a clear acceptance that people bring very different things to the table when they're from more diverse backgrounds.
Absolutely. And you understand the perspective they bring to the table, right? Which sometimes is tunnel, right? And they don't mean, it's tunnel for the overall picture, not for their picture. It's probably a very broad view from their perspective. And you've got to learn to combine those perspectives and help salespeople meet product managers and help them understand the challenges that they both face on a day-to-day basis. So it absolutely has provided a great foundation, appreciating those that sit around the table with me on a daily basis.
So to summarize, what more would you say about that career journey?
It's fun, especially when you realize success, right? And you see that nurse that breathes and is able to focus on the patient. You see that transporter that just doesn't go from room to room, but they're collaborating and they're appreciating the team between them and the nurse and the bed cleaners and everything, every other staff member in that health system. So it's rewarding and it's fun, but it's fun.
So thank you very much, Connie. It's been an awesome conversation. It's been great to talk to you.
Take care.
Connie, I cannot thank you enough for being my guest on this episode of She Talks Tech. And thanks to all of you for listening. We really appreciate it. If you want to find out more about Connie, you can connect with her on LinkedIn. Please do subscribe and rate the podcast and give us that all-important 5-star review. And keep tuned to our channel for new episodes of She Talks Tech.